Hello and welcome to another episode of the In Her Lens podcast, a series dedicated to centering underrepresented perspectives in film and television. In this podcast, you and I, listener, we get to know the journeys and the work of today's most innovative, thoughtful, and brave creators in the entertainment industry. My name is Nadine, and you're listening to the third season of this podcast. And in this season, I'm focusing entirely on filmmaking in the age of climate change. In previous episodes, you can get to know scholars, business directors, scientists, filmmakers, and more, all of whom are working and studying the intersection of visual storytelling and climate justice. Today, we have a very special episode. Two absolute legends that I'm still a little bit in shock I got to talk to about their upcoming work. Today, you'll meet Rumbi Katedza and More Angels Mbiza. Rumbi Katedza is a filmmaker and writer who has lived in the USA, Japan, Italy, Canada, the UK, and Zimbabwe. She produces corporate and independent narrative and documentary content through her production company, Maijai Films, a company that is focused on pioneering a new generation of Zimbabwean films and filmmakers through creative co-productions. She's been the director of the Zimbabwe International Film Festival, and in addition to co-producing and line-producing projects, Maijai Films also runs Postcards from Zimbabwe, a children's audiovisual and life skills training project. One of her latest films, Transactions, tells a story of a Zimbabwean migration through a family that is divided by the circumstances of a failed economy. Separated across the world, the family meets online to decide who needs the most financial support back home. Dr. More Angels Mbiza is one of the world's leading lion ecologists. More Angels is a conservation biologist working at the intersection of conservation and community development in Zimbabwe. She is the founder and executive director of Wildlife Conservation Action, an organization that focuses on building the capacity of local communities to protect and coexist with wildlife whilst improving their livelihoods. She received her doctoral degree in zoology from the University of Oxford, where she studied African lions in the Hwange National Park. In 2018, her work with the lions was featured in a National Geographic short film, One Woman's Remarkable Journey to Protect Lions. And in 2019, More Angels was awarded the TED Fellowship and gave a famous TED Talk, How Community-Led Conservation Can Save Life. Because also amongst her study was the famous Cecil the Lion until he was shot by a trophy hunter in 2015. So in this TED Talk, she wonders how things could have gone differently and asks, what if the community that lived next to Cecil was involved in protecting him? The narrative and practice around conservation in Africa is changing. African women leaders are upending the dominance of mostly white Western men in conserving their continent's natural landscapes and wildlife. A new vital approach means putting especially women at the center, which is a challenge in societies and countries where women are severely underrepresented in science. The World Economic Forum has noted that Africa has about 1/8 of the scientists of the developed West, of whom fewer than 30% are women. How are wildlife and climate change related in this case? Where farmers are being hurt by climate change, it's making their lives harder, the droughts are bringing wildlife to fertile ground, so the resilience and sustainability of all ecosystems is under threat. More Angels' focus and passion lies completely in empowering on-the-ground local communities in living harmoniously alongside wildlife in our new climate reality. One provision we talk about in this episode, for example, which More Angel helps implement, is the mobile boma. They are tall wooden stakes with tarpaulins hanging off of them to create predator-proof enclosures for cattle at night. More Angel says that wild lion populations are in rapid decline in West and Central Africa, adding that where there is political unrest, it tends to result in human precarity and an immediate rise of illegal poaching. Rumbi is a filmmaker that is currently developing a film about this incredible woman, mother, and absolute leader, More Angels. And this is what I talked to them about in this episode. How they met, what they are developing, the realities of conservation in Zimbabwe, its film landscape, and the critically important right to tell your own stories. Let's get to know them. Here are Rumbi Katedza and More Angels Mbiza on In Her Lens. thank you so much for being here and welcome to In Her Lens, season 3. The way that I always start the podcast is that we go through like a small rapid fire question. I designed questions around the seasons of the year. So it's 4 questions, a spring, a summer, and a fall, and a winter question, just to get a little bit more insight about you and who you are. Are you both down to answer that?
Yeah.
Totally.
Yes. Perfect. Okay. Should we go more angels? You answer first and then Rumi, you answer second. The first question is seasonal question, spring. What is the first thing that you do when you wake up in the morning?
Yeah, I think it depends on the day, but yeah, most days I'm ashamed to admit that probably the first thing that I do is just look at my phone.
Yeah, I have a really bad habit with going on my phone as well. But I'm trying to work on it. I'm trying to put it in a different room, but it's difficult. It's very difficult.
I do the same thing. Like, you know, I noticed that it was really becoming a big habit. So now I also put it in a different room. So the first thing I usually do is I put my dog out of the house. And he inevitably he leads me to my phone.
Yeah. So funny. The summer question, if you could go to a concert tonight of any artist, past or still alive, who would you go see?
Westlife. I would love to go to Westlife. I hope they have like a reunion show and just go around the world. I think they were part of like, you know, my transition from like childhood to adulthood, like somewhere there. So yeah, they are special.
I have a lot, but if I were just to choose one, I would probably choose Billie Holiday.
Oh wow, beautiful.
They're in my life right now. Mellow. I could sit in a room, really small room, and just listen to her croon.
Mm-hmm. Good one. The fall question, coffee or tea?
Coffee, like first thing in the morning, then the rest of the day tea. Because yeah, with more than one cup of coffee, like I start having palpitations. But I love my tea. I love tea. I can drink tea like 4 times a day.
Yeah,
I feel so seen by you, more angels. Like the same with me. I drink coffee first thing in the morning. It helps me wake up. Then after that, it has to be tea.
Yeah. I'm weaning off of the coffee at the moment. I'm trying to drink less coffee, although I do have one right now. But I agree that tea, there's so many different teas, so comforting, better than just straight water. The winter question is there a word or a phrase that you carry with you when the days are a little darker?
Yeah, I would say courage. It's one of the words that I really love. Because yeah, I think like some situation that I find myself in, I just need that little courage. So yeah, courage is the word.
That's a really good one.
For me, it's onwards. Just keep going, never give up. So I always like, you know, repeat that in my head, like keep going onwards and we'll get there.
Those two words fit so beautifully together, which is probably why you are working together.
Courage onwards.
Thank you both so much for being here. It's really such an honor to spend time with you. I would love to get to know you both a little bit individually. Maybe Rumi, starting with you. Where are you from? Where are you at the moment? And maybe tell us a vibrant childhood memory that you have.
Okay. So I am Rumi, filmmaker from Zimbabwe. And I'm currently in Zimbabwe, in Harare, the capital city. And a vibrant memory from my childhood. You know, I for like one semester, one term, I went to this primary school in a part of Harare called Greendale. And I had the best memory of cycling to and from school. I used to love it. And it breaks my heart that I don't feel the same safety sending my daughter to school on her bicycle. So I'm hoping that the cities will change and ultimately we'll be able to do that again. Just the joy of being able to leave home and get around and, you know, having your own form of transport. I loved that.
Yeah. As a Dutch person, I'm like, yes, biking. Our favorite thing to do here.
And more angels, tell us a little bit about you. Where are you right now? Where are you from?
Okay, yeah, my name is More Angels Mbiza, and I'm here in Harare, the capital city of Zimbabwe, and I grew up in Chiredzi, which is a small town in the low belt of Zimbabwe. And yeah, one of my childhood memories is just listening to Tracy Chapman, Fast Car. My dad had a cassette of that album. And yeah, it was his favorite song. So like, it's one of those memories. Like even now when I hear Fast Car, like I just remember that day, like listening to it with my father. Yeah.
It's so powerful. Music carries so much in our lives and so many memories. So wonderful to hear. I would love to know a little bit about both of your schooling and what education looked like for you. Did you like going to school? More Angels, how was that those younger years for you?
Yeah, I loved school. I'm like, sometimes I'm just like surprised when I look back, because there was one day, like this specific day. So I woke up, I went to bath, hot shower. I'm like already dressing up. I would wake up like around 5 or somewhere there. And then I like showered, dressed up, like was ready to go to school. And then my aunt, who I was sharing the room with, was like, "Where are you going?" I'm like, "I'm going to school." They just said,
"Always ready, 7 days a week."
Oh my God, I love school. So it's just like one of those funny things that I always look back and just wonder, like,
that's so funny.
Who does that?
And Rumbi, for you, what was it like for you?
I really did love school, particularly when I was younger, and we didn't live in one place. So I went to primary school in 3 different countries.
Okay.
And so it was really exciting to like find new ways of, you know, learning and meeting new people and understand different cultures. So I loved that about it. But once I got to high school, I was put in a very strict boarding school.
Mm.
So that experience really changed. I still loved learning and school, but I now felt more constricted.
Mm-hmm.
So I made sure that when I finished high school and I really pushed for it, I said to my parents, I want to go somewhere far away, somewhere I'd never been before. So I applied to a bunch of different schools. And so my primary school was in Japan, in the US, and in Zimbabwe. And then I went to boarding school in Zimbabwe. And then for university, I went to Canada. And wow, that was, I loved my university years. I loved my undergrad. I met so many friends who are my friends to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something about exploring and learning in a space that is not necessarily your home space.
Yeah. I also grew up moving around a lot. So I also very much relate to the learning by being in a new place and learning. Yeah, I don't know. I feel most myself when I'm in new spaces. And More Angels, did you like studying onwards? What were your next steps after primary school?
Yeah, I did. I did O levels, my A levels, and then I was in a boarding school as well for my secondary school and the A levels, and then I came to Harare for my university, for my undergrad, at the University of Zimbabwe, and that's where I studied environmental science for my undergrad. And then I did my master's as well at the University of Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then I went to like years later, I went to the UK, to Oxford, and did initially I did a postgraduate diploma, and then after that I did a DPhil in zoology. Yeah, so that's my like, yes.
And where did your passion for environmentalism come from? Do you remember something that happened when you were younger? Is it something you've grown up with? Is it something that your parents were interested in? Where do you think it started for you?
Yeah, it's not something that I grew up with or even like thought about when I was younger. It was something that just happened, like a path that I just like ended up on when I was doing my master's, and I started to learn about wildlife ecology behavior, and that just sparked an interest in me. Because growing up, I didn't know anything about conservation or wildlife. I had not seen any animal, like wild animal, before that. And so when I started to learn about these things, it just like sparked an interest in me. And then I decided to do a project on African wild dogs. And that took me to a conservancy, a wildlife conservancy. And when I got there, that's when I experienced like my first sighting of a wild animal. I saw impalas, zebras, giraffes, and that just like filled me with so much excitement. And I just felt so connected to the wild and to the animals as well. And just that exposure and that experience, that's how I decided to go into wildlife conservation as a career. So I would say like it's not something that I had like always thought about or always thought I was going to do, but it's the path that I guess it was destiny for me to end up in this field. Yeah.
And when you started working in the field and doing research, what kind of people are you surrounded with within Zimbabwe? Like, what does the landscape of conservation look like there?
Yeah, so initially, like I was just focusing on research, working inside the national parks and focusing on trying to understand wildlife ecology and behavior and using that data for management and also for conservation of these species. So I was really just focused on the wildlife, on the animals, and trying to understand them. And then after I had finished my PhD, and when I was thinking about starting my own organization, that's when it occurred to me that I needed to change the way I was doing conservation, because I was so focused on protecting the wildlife. I then realized that there was a part that was missing, or a part that we were not considering, and which was like really the backbone and something that was going to transform the protection of nature, and which was the people and the communities living around these wildlife areas. Mm-hmm. So from that point, and when I formed my organization, I started to shift my focus to people and local communities living around wildlife, who are involved in the protection of these wildlife species. So that became like my focus now, like looking at how we can find the balance between people and nature, and how we can bring the two together and find a way for both to thrive and share the same landscapes.
Yeah, it's really exciting to hear. Rumbi, you're a filmmaker and producer. Really tell us a little bit about how you found your way to that industry and what excites you about filmmaking.
I came from a theater background, actually. I used to write plays when I was in school, and right up until university, I used to act and direct. But I had this obsession with films. You know, I used to consume a lot of them from video stores. I'm showing my age. And I used to just, from wherever, whatever country I could find a film from, I would watch it. And I just loved like the connection you could get from watching a film. So when I finished, when I was at university, I actually shifted to study film. And after that, I just immersed myself in the film sector in Zimbabwe. And I've been there ever since. And it's been really fulfilling to be able to tell stories that I feel haven't really been shared with the world yet. And there's so many stories in Zimbabwe that just haven't been told. And that excites me, you know. And I've been doing scripted and documentary, and right now really focusing on documentaries. and loving the scope of how documentaries have really changed and how they've become so much more popular now with streams in recent times. So there's so much more you can do with them in terms of your storytelling techniques.
Yeah, so true. They really, I mean, the accessibility of film has changed so much. I feel like we're all still playing catch up in the power of this form and the reach of this form that kind of expanded all across the globe. So let's talk about both of you together. How did you meet? Do you remember the very first time that you met, whether that's via call or were you introduced to each other? What was that moment like?
Or Angels, I think I pursued you, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, now I can't even remember. Maybe you have a better memory of that.
I know, it's like, because I was also trying to think, when did we first meet? But I had known about More Angels for a long time because, you know, I just keep up with the news and stuff. And I was taken by the work that she does. And I had watched her TED Talk mm-hmm. and some of the short documentaries that there are about her online. And I said, this woman's story is incredible, but I need to tell it in a different way. Mm. So we have a lot of mutual friends because More Angels is from the Mandela Washington Fellowship community. So I have a lot of friends who were fellows of that too. And they connected us. Mm-hmm. That's what I remember, More Angels.
Yeah, that's right.
Until the day that I wound up at your doorstep, I think. Yeah.
Knock on the door. And More Angels, do you remember when Rumbi approached you? What did that feel like? What excited you about making this connection?
Yeah. So I think we initially had like phone calls and just talked about some of the ideas around what we can do together. And then we met in person when they came to my place. And then we also talked a lot about my work and also some of the things that might be important to highlight. And so I think it was also around that time when Rumbi's film documentary came out, Transactions. So I was also like, wow, because I didn't know her like before that, because I'm also like, I think I'm just like a little like behind with things, like
you have a lot going on.
So me, like, yeah, so that's when I saw the and just realized that wow, she's doing some amazing work. And then that's when I started following her work and just seeing all these amazing films she has been making and being involved in. So it was really amazing, and I was really excited to do something with her and also tell my story. And as you said, like as she said previously, like the Zimbabwean story hasn't been told, and in most cases the people who have told it are not even Zimbabwean. So there's also that element where we need to tell our own stories. So it was really exciting for me to have someone like tell my story who knows our Zimbabwean context and has also like deeply involved and passionate about the country. So that is exciting.
The listeners have no idea, but what are you working on? What can you tell us? What is the idea? What are the details? What does it look like at this time?
Still a work in progress, hey? You know, what's been so beautiful about meeting More Angels is her patience with me and my process. I wanted to evolve organically and get to a space where the story starts to tell us what it wants it to be. And mm-hmm. She's been open to this whole concept that we have of coming to spend time with the community and engaging with people in the communities that she works to get a sense of what kind of outcomes they want to have from the production of a film mm-hmm. that takes place in the area. And so for me especially, impact of the film is very important, and More Angels can speak more to like the kind of geography and the climate space in which she is working and the difficulty of that. But I would like this film to be something that not only shares a very important story that can, you know, help people who are facing similar challenges in other areas, but also that it creates the impact that the people in those communities want to see.
Yeah. More Angels, tell us a little bit about maybe the content of what you're really looking for.
Yeah. I think, Ruby has already alluded to some of it. And I think also just something that the community can also watch and like see themselves in there and can see their stories being told. Because oftentimes, like, you know, people do documentaries or stories of communities or they do shoots of the communities, but they never like come back to let them watch and see the final product. So I'm also hoping that the communities we work with would also be in the position to have that opportunity to see themselves and hear themselves and each other. And also, I think that would like really create that bond and connection between the community members themselves. The communities we work with are like marginalized communities. They live on the edges of protected areas, wildlife areas. So they live with wildlife. They face challenges from living with wildlife, but they are also in areas that are really like dry and arid. So they are also facing challenges from climate change. And so they are facing all these various challenges and also trying to live among wildlife and also contribute to the protection of wildlife species and nature in general. So those are the type of communities that we are working with and trying to find solutions for them to be more resilient to all these challenges that they are facing.
What's really key and important to recognize is that More Angels is working in conservation. The working title of the documentary currently is The Conservationist. And people who look like More Angels are not usually considered to be conservationists. She's a Black woman working in Zimbabwe, deep in, you know, sometimes national parks areas. And she's working to create sustainable livelihoods for the people that she works with, not only to take care of the wildlife, but to create a win-win situation for wildlife and the communities as well. And in the past, you know, a lot of the stories I've seen have been about how do we save the animals, but not about how can we create solutions that make sure that the animals are safe and the communities are able to also live. Because we're now in a time where, obviously, with drought, you're going to have a lot of animals moving into populated areas. So what do we do to now protect both? And More Angels has really opened my eyes to some of the solutions that are possible. And these are some of the things I'd like to come out.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to talk about this specifically because I think this subject falls, you know, there's one way to talk about conservation. And then, you know, we see like big series like Planet Earth and it's all very beautiful and fantastical. And exactly like you said, very focused on the environment or the animals. But we are living in a very large ecosystem of which we are 100% a part. And within that ecosystem that we've created as humanity, there are all these power structures in place, including racism, patriarchy, sexism, all of these things, which are all added up in the challenges that you're facing. There's so much to talk about in that form. Why do you think a film between the two of you is the way that you're able to refocus the lens a little bit?
I can talk about just how I think film is a great way of reaching audiences that are far away, that, you know, that normally wouldn't have access to these stories. These are stories of marginalized people who you don't normally see on screen. And it's a great way of connecting communities as well. One important part of the process, I think the process of making this film is equally as important as the actual film that we will eventually make. Because we have been able to create networks with other people who are working in climate, in the climate space, And it's been a learning experience for me. And it's been a great opportunity for us to see the different stages of making the film. How can we connect with these networks that we have created? My producer and myself went to the Climate Story Lab in South Africa, and that was a great place to meet storytellers who are working in theater, podcasts, music, various creative art forms to tell the climate story. So we also discussed how best we could disseminate the film within their communities as well. So you have, you know, film is a great way of reaching a broader audience, and also just, you know, allowing for a process to take place, you know, as you actually make the film. Mm-hmm. A collaborative.
Yeah, I think this is very something that I think we forget very easily when we're being productive and we're creating a product. But it is, like you said, what we do in the process of making is also what makes it. And then how do we go from there? One thing I would love to talk about more, Angels, as well, is the walls that you are running into and the work that you're doing. I'm not from Zimbabwe. I don't know much about the landscape there. I would love to know a little bit about what are some of the struggles that you're running into in the work that you're doing, and Rumi, maybe how that adds to the story then later on in the film.
Yeah, I think there are various challenges to what we are trying to do. And I think one of the challenges, like in conservation now, is just that the because of climate change and because of like the various factors that we are facing on the planet, like it's becoming more challenging to try and find balance between anything. But for our work specifically is finding the balance between people and wildlife. And because of the challenges that are there, like at the moment we are facing a lot of habitat destruction for wildlife. So spaces that wildlife used to roam, we now have people, we now have deforestation taking place there. And because of that, and because people and wildlife are not separated, so it's different from other countries or areas where you have wildlife in a fenced area, like, you know, far removed from where people are. But here we have an interaction of people and wildlife. So because of that, there is always like conflict because of that constant interaction, there's negative interactions, and people get killed, they get injured, their livestock, their crops, which are their sources of livelihood, they get destroyed by wildlife. And then you also have wildlife being killed because when they destroy people's livelihoods or when they kill people, then the wildlife would also be put down. So in the end, like, there is losses on both sides. People lose, wildlife lose. And so we are trying to find that balance where people and wildlife can coexist together, where communities can be involved in the conservation of wildlife, because it's also one of our values and one of the things that we hold so dear, is that communities should lead conservation efforts, they should drive conservation efforts, and they should contribute to conservation. But for them to do that, they have to be in a space where they are feeling like, you know, they are protected, they are also secure, their livelihoods are taken care of. So we are trying to find that balance where we reduce the cost that these communities are facing from living with wildlife, from the challenges that they are facing from climate change, and try to find solutions together with the communities. And one of the challenges, like in with our work, is that all this work, like, it requires a lot of money to do it. And so one of our challenges is just finding the funding to get the work done on the ground, is one of the challenges we are facing. And I think, as Rumi said, sometimes telling these stories would also ensure that people that are not in that situation may understand like what's really happening on the ground, and they can see the urgency of the situation and also the need for resources and support for those people that are facing those challenges and that are also trying to protect wildlife in those situations where they are also enduring the cost. So yeah, I would say these are some of the challenges we are facing and the kind of landscape we are dealing with.
Mm-hmm. With in regards to funding, what are resources that are available to you right now? And where do you see a very big lack happening when it comes to conservation in Zimbabwe?
Yeah, so all our work, like, because we are a non-profit, so all our work is dependent on donor funding. So everything that we do with the communities, the solutions that we come up with the communities and implementing those solutions, like, requires money. Having people work on the ground, you know, we need vehicles for our team to be able to be mobile and move around within these communities. And then we also need, like, you know, technologies, new technologies that we would use to help these communities. For example, we are using predator-proof mobile bombers, which are made of like canvas material. So it's a structure that the communities are using to put their livestock in to protect the livestock against predation by lions and hyenas. And because this mobile bomber is mobile, as the name suggests, they can move it around their crop fields. It fertilizes the soil, it improves soil fertility. And when the farmers put their crops there, they get better harvest. It improves food security. So in doing that, in providing that, those mobile bombers, then we are eliminating the challenge of loss of their livestock. We are also ensuring that they are now more resilient to the impact of climate change, because now they are able to plant their fields in soils that are also fertile, and we are also ensuring that they protect the soil practice conservation agriculture in those pieces of land. So these technologies also require a lot of money. Yeah,
it's a really empowering tool, but I can imagine an expensive one at this stage. I'm sure there are structures in place that are currently big walls in order to further develop the work of conservation within Zimbabwe, and that stuff that you're walking into, like you just said, with finances, with technologies like the technology you explained. Is there something that is currently happening that you would like to applaud or highlight that is working well?
Yes. So within our work, like, we also really focus on finding solutions that are affordable and that are easy for the communities to implement. And we also look at their traditional ecological knowledge and what they have been practicing like over the years or traditionally. And we also include that in our set of mitigation measures. So some of the mitigation measures that we are using to deal with the human wildlife conflict are things that are already being done by these communities. We just come in and support that and strengthen that. So I can give examples of for protecting their livestock, they use a traditional livestock crows that they keep their livestock in overnight. And what we come in and do is ensuring that these crows are strengthened and the predators are not able to get in and kill the livestock. So we really focus on like finding the things that the communities are already doing and strengthening that and supporting that with resources, with knowledge exchange and training. I think that's also something that we are tapping into.
Rumi, what is something that you've observed maybe that you've seen play out coming kind of from an outside perspective and filming or going to film and trying to form a story? What is something that you've seen that is a wall that you had not expected there to be, or something that is going very well that was a surprise to you?
You spoke earlier about the challenges of funding for War Angels, and it's also there. It's equally challenging just to get the funds to make a film of this magnitude, because to be able to go and travel to spend time in with the communities, it takes us, 12 to 16 hours just to drive there, and very difficult roads. And it's not a cheap undertaking, because we want to be able to stay there for long periods of time. So that's been our major challenge, is getting funds to do that, because we're not making another National Geographic piece. We're telling a very personal story of a woman who's working against all odds to change people's lives through the work that she does. And I'm hoping that more people will see the beauty and the benefit in that. And I've been learning a lot in terms of, indigenous knowledge systems that I was not aware of. And every time I have a conversation with More Angels, she teaches me something new. So that's really been the really, that's why I make documentaries and why I make films, because I like learning new stuff. I geek out about it. And More Angels probably is just like,
I spend every day thinking about these things.
every day. But it's exciting to be able to learn these things and how these things can actually positively affect climate change and change within people's lives, so that they've got food throughout the year. Even if there's drought, they will be fine. And just in terms of bridging that gap between humans and wildlife and big business, because there are a lot of huge companies out there, really big conservation companies out there. I mean, I know that it's a really big challenge sometimes for More Angels just to like keep the communication going from the different people that she needs to communicate with just to get simple things done. So I take off my hat to her and the work that she does every day, because she's very humble about it, but it's a big job that she's doing. It's a really
Humongous. I can only imagine that, very often, I don't know why, where this presumption comes from with conservation and environmental work. It's like, oh, you're really in nature and you're really spending time with nature. But really, it's people work, because we are just the active actors in this Anthropocene that we're living in at the moment. As humans, we are the ones who are driving so much change, whether it's positive or negative, in our communities and in our world. So yeah, I also tip my hat to you, More Angels. Where does your love, do you think, for conversation, More Angels, come from? Do you have interest in working with lots of people? I mean, you must have.
So when I was young, actually, I wanted to be a psychologist. But I wanted to work with children. So I think I always like had that inclination towards like working in a job that helps me to make a difference to people's lives. And so when I started like my conservation career, I thought, oh well, like I'm now like working with animals, I'm trying to make a difference for these animals. But then, like when I started my organization and started focusing more on communities and finding that balance, that's when I realized that, oh well, like I've come full circle back to where I wanted to be, where I was doing something that was meaningful for people. And so I'm in a place that I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, which is to help both people and wildlife. So I'm really happy about how everything turned out.
So
Although I
interesting.
didn't
You're not a child
like,
psychologist, but it's coming. It's all the same. Everything is connected to everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Rumbi, you were telling like you said, a very personal story, really highlighting a woman in this world who's working against all odds. How do you fuel this to continue it being a fruitful partnership? How do you build a relationship with More Angels, and how do you guys stay in communication with each other?
Every so often I just drop her a message just to see how she's doing, just to keep the communication going. And We continue to try to raise the resources to spend long period of time together so that we can get into more of the crux of this story. But it's a long journey, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a long journey. And I'll tell you about the first time we filmed More Angels. We just had a conversation, like a mini interview. And I asked her what, if she was to write a letter to Zimbabwe, or if she was to write a letter to her son, what would you say? And that's where everything came out. I was like, this really is a story about the beauty of a nation. You know, like a rose, it's beautiful, but there are dangers to it, and there are difficulties in like handling it. And that's how I see More Angels in the work that she does, and how I'm starting to look at the story, because like you said, it is beautiful out there. The landscapes are incredible, but beneath the surface, there's so many challenges that have to be dealt with on a daily basis and addressed, whether it's an issue of water or, you know, or whatever else, or crops not, you know, growing fully, or whatever else it is. And I think just being able to find the beauty below even is something that More Angels is helping me do, and, you know, helping me see. So I'm very excited about the prospect of eventually finishing production, because I've got a great story to tell about the beauty of the work that she does and the beauty of a country that is so often misunderstood.
So, I mean, the question of write a letter, like, do you want my job? Such a good question to ask. I want to talk a bit about the film landscape in Zimbabwe specifically, and where you're looking to screen this film. I know we touched a little bit on really bringing it to the communities. And I do think that that is something that is really important to highlight, that very often, especially I live in Amsterdam, there are a lot of like big international film festivals here, and then they have big sections of African film. And I was having a discussion with one of the programmers about the fact that, or a conversation, that very often these films that are about certain local communities then get only screened in the global north, so to speak. What are your experiences of that? And what are your hopes with your own film?
You find like the bigger films end up at festivals and stuff and don't get bought or picked up by broadcasters. And the work that I've done has mostly been taken back to communities in terms of like mobile video, or there are organizations that are popping up now like Sunshine Cinema that have like solar mobile screening systems that they take around, which is a great way of like getting to areas that may have issues with electricity. So that's the hope, that we can do that, that it'll reach a broad audience, that will be able to get it on broadcast television, but also be able to screen it in more intimate environments. With our current impact program that we're running with Transactions, my other film, we've done a whole bunch of different stuff, you know, like online events, we've done pop-ups, we've done silent screenings, we've done partner screenings with organizations that may have an interest in some aspect, some thematic area that's covered in the film. So that's why I said at the beginning that the impact campaign for us will be a very key part of creating the distribution strategy for the film, and determining how we disseminate it and to whom and how and when and all of those questions. So it's all, it's part of the process as well.
Mm-hmm. And More Angels, if you could choose one place later to screen it, what is a place that you would like to bring the film to, most specifically, for to open it a bit up to us?
Yeah, I think the communities we work with, I think it will be really nice for them to see the film and to also watch their friends and family, like, you know, on the big screen.
Yeah.
I think it will be something like exciting for them, even for the kids to be able to have that opportunity. I think it's something that they don't see often. And yeah, that will be really nice for them to see and also to learn from the film. It will be a good learning experience for them as well. Yeah, so I think that will be like one place that I'll choose.
Yeah, I'm super excited to see how it will come together. What is one thing that you would like all the listeners to know about conservation in Zimbabwe at this moment and what it looks like today?
Yeah, I think there has been a lot of shifts and changes over the years. And I think Rumbi pointed it out in the beginning of our conversation that like conservation maybe a decade ago was something that was seen as a like an occupation for either white people or people from other countries coming in and doing conservation in the country. And I think that has like sort of transformed and shifted over the years. And now we have people like myself and other local Zimbabweans that are moving into the conservation space. And we are also having communities themselves like now being involved and taking part in these conservation efforts, which is something that was not the case like some decades ago. So I think that has been something that has been transformative. And I think we should also just keep pushing towards having conservation as a thing that should be community driven across the entire planet. Like we have to see more communities being involved, the indigenous people, the local people. Like they need to be given these opportunities to do conservation, to be in nature and to connect with nature. So I think, yeah, that's something that I would say I can let people know. And maybe one thing as well is just like letting everyone know that they have a role to play in conservation. Like Rumbi's role is now like telling those stories. So a filmmaker comes in and tells the stories. You are telling the story. There are people who are engineers. They can, you know, develop some tech for us. So everyone has a role to play in conservation. Like you don't have to be a trained conservationist to do the work. Whatever your profession is, whatever your background is, you can contribute something. Some people contribute by volunteering their time. Some people contribute by you know, donating their money. So either way, like you can really play a key role in conserving our planet.
Mm-hmm. Rumbi, if anything to add to that?
No, I think she said it so well. She really did. I think something she didn't bring up that I think is also really important is the training work that she's doing. She speaks. You speak a lot more, Angels, about people's roles and responsibilities, but I think there's something that you're doing in terms of building the future as well, and ensuring that even once you leave a space, and if you take the work that you're doing to a new space, how you make sure that the community that you have left is also knowledgeable in terms of conservation, like actual things like the work that you're doing with tagging and stuff. Those things are, I think that's insane exciting. It would be great if she spoke about that as well.
I would love to know. I think it's also one thing that I talk about a lot with filmmaking is like we go in and documentary filmmaking, like the traditional old way of doing it, you know, going in, filming something, leaving again. And like, are you doing more damage than good? And what is the track that you're leaving? And this is really exciting. So tell me more.
Yeah. I think like we really focus on strengthening capacity. So it's our mission, like to strengthen capacity because, yeah, I think we also want to remove that mentality that like we need to do things for people, or we need to, you know, we want to remove that savior mentality that's like sitting within us in conservation, where somebody feels like they are coming in to help somebody, but we want to build the capacity so that the communities are able to do those things themselves. They are able to live together in harmony with wildlife because of the knowledge that they get, the skills that they get, the tools that they get, the resources that they get, then they are able to do it themselves. So we also focus on training or on exchanging knowledge with our communities, but also the next generation of conservation leaders. Like we want our local Black Zimbabweans to be in the conservation sector, to see it as a career that they can choose and that they can find fulfillment in. So we are also working on building their skills and their knowledge and their field experience within the conservation sector. So it's really something that is a big that we focus on, strengthening that capacity.
Well, I'm really impressed and touched by the work that you both are doing. I'm very grateful we got to spend this time together. As kind of a closing question, Rumi, what is one thing that inspires you in More Angels? And More Angels, what is something that inspires you in Rumi?
You know, More Angels, just the work that she's doing and how many lives that she touches on a very real level, tangible livelihoods. And I mean, she may not see it the same way, but the way I see it, she is, you know, creating the space and the innovation for generations to survive. And I'm inspired by the work she does. I'm inspired. She's a Black woman. She's a mother. She is a kick-ass head of an organization that she founded. So I mean, she's out there and she's doing the thing. And I support, I really am impressed by all the work that she's doing.
Oh, thank you, Rumi, for that. Yeah, I'm also like equally inspired by Rumi and her work. And yeah, I think the filming industry, I think is still like very male dominated, and to see her, continue to shine with every piece of her work being award-winning, like that is really something that I admire about her. And yeah, I am just hoping that she will keep pushing and fighting through all the challenges, like the patriarchy and all those things. I am just rooting for her to keep shining and being a great example to young Black Zimbabweans that want to be in the film industry, so that they can also follow in her footsteps and be strengthened by what she has done.
Thank you both so much for being here. I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for the work that you do and how you exist together. And thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you, Nadine.
Thank you.
I'm not going to lie, as much as 1 hour might be long for you to listen to, listener, I wish these podcasts were 2 hours long. There are so many layers and twists and turns to person's work and life. I couldn't be more grateful to you, Rumi, and More Angels, for lending some of your time to being here with us. Thank you both deeply for the revolutionary work that you are doing. And please check out the episode notes. There you will find More Angels' TED Talk and studies and features, as well as Rumi's previous work and links to all of their socials. If you want to support their work, please don't hesitate to reach out to them or to me so we can connect. Listener, do you want to support this podcast and these kinds of conversations? Make sure to hit the follow or subscribe. You won't get any notifications, but this way the podcast gets amplified by the algorithm and we can get these important stories to more interested parties. You can follow the pod on Instagram too, at In Her Lens Podcast. We are on episode 12 already of season 3, so we are going to take a short break. The climate and film subject is not over yet. We just need a little bit of time to refigure, zoom out, and let the episodes that are out have their moment. So we'll be back at the end of May, and I look forward to continuing on our quest of learning and meeting new people. I'll see you very soon. Bye.